Hello and welcome to episode 144 of the Bronx Beat Podcast. I'm your host, EJ Fagan, and tonight I am joined by Scott Moss.
Hey, guys.
And Jim Carruthers.
Hey, fellas.
Guys, everything is good. I don't know about anyone else here, but I have renewed respect for any baseball player with a back injury because they suck. But I am healthy and thankful for a wonderful physical therapist. We are back recording, and the Yankees haven't lost a game since we last recorded.
That's a good week. I'll take that.
What I love is that the Yankees have this. If you look at MLB.com standings, the last 10 games, it says 9-1, and it said 9-1 since they lost that one game at Houston. And so I hope that they win. Like they get to the point where they have like a 9-game winning streak, and then they lose one, and then they do another 9-game winning streak. So it's just 9-1 forever. That's my fantasy right now.
Oh, okay. I mean, aim high, you know.
All right, highlights of the winning streak. Just real quick before we get into the real talk, the real discussion stuff. What have been the best parts so far?
I would say the comebacks. The fact that this team is just it does feel inevitable, even when they're down, and it's a different dude every night. I don't know. It's kind of like must see TV from the sixth inning on, especially if they're losing because you can't walk away from these guys.
If they're winning and David Robertson's in the game.
Details.
All right. So my highlight, I just want to say, is that for some reason, the discussion, at least on the Yes broadcast, has not talked about this. The Yankees have been not only 15 for their last 16, but they've done it at the Houston Astros, home against the Cleveland Indians, against the Anaheim Angels, who I believe have the third best winning percentage in the American League at the moment, and against the Minnesota Twins, who went to the playoffs last year. Like, the Yankees are wrecking the best teams in the American League right now, and as we are recording this, are up one run against the Red Sox, or up two runs against the Red Sox. Thank you, Giancarlo Stanton just hit another home run. There we go. He's fixed. So like this team feels like it's for real, like for real, for real. Am I wrong about that?
No, totally agree. I mean, I think a big part of what Jim was noting, that there's always the chance of a comeback, is, and this is the simpler version of that, is that they are this juggernaut offense like we thought they would be. So I just did a quick tally. Over the past 2 weeks, they're averaging 6.1 runs a game. You're going to win a lot of games and have a lot of comebacks when you can do that, which is also fun to see. And the pitching, like all pitching in baseball, I guess, is up and down. But in the end, this is a pretty deep rotation. The fact that without Montgomery, I think they're not going to miss a beat with Herman, maybe. And we'll talk more about that. And Gray may or may not have righted the ship. I think they have either somewhere between enough pitching for this offense or potentially very good pitching. So there's every reason to think they're for real.
The starting pitching has been miraculous during this streak. Luis Severino, CC Sabathia, and Masahiro Tanaka have been excellent. Domingo Herman had that streak. I think the Yankees, they had three straight shutouts against the Astros, was it? Or they almost had it? I guess they blew the last shutout.
Two shutouts, but then the game before they lost 2-1. So for three games, two runs against the Astros is really good.
I mean, I'm not used to the Yankees being even last year's team had big major flaws until at least the trade deadline, and I just can't pick them out. Like, I'm trying to figure out where I want to upgrade this team, and other than adding a right-handed reliever, I'm not sure the Yankees can add a player right now that will make a big difference.
Yeah, I think I totally agree. I think the only thing I worry about is CC's lower half. As long as CC's legs are fine, I think he can pitch like this. But yeah, you're right. If all things being, if we maintain this current state, no, there's nowhere to add because there's nothing available that's going to be an improvement. And to touch on Severino, that game that he pitched against Houston, that was a total gem. But the Houston batters were just disheveled, and I feel like they had to go call their parents after that game to talk to just to get it off their chest, because that was a wrecking ball that he put on them in that game. I haven't seen a good lineup dismantled like that in a long, long time, especially Houston.
Yeah, just following up on EJ's point about the pitching, which is funny. Maybe this is just memory, but you remember the recent stuff where the last four games they've won. It's great. They've been averaging. They've been giving up 2, 4, 5, 6 runs. But we almost forgot how unhittable they were against Houston before that, the Angels. So over those same past 14 games, they're averaging 6 point runs scored, and giving up 2.5 runs. So, in a sense, they're actually not a creature of luck. You know, whenever you see a streak like 15 out of 16 and a bunch of one-run games, you think, okay, they've done really well, but the one-run games are luck. But no, if you're scoring 2.5 times more runs than you're giving up, you should be winning about 13 or 14 or 15 out of those 16. So I think this is remarkably the sort of unrealistic stretch that actually is just totally for real.
All right, I want to move on to the actual topics we're planning out for today. Brandon Drury is on the verge of returning to the Yankees. He's played quite a few rehab games. He's got 12 rehab games after having basically a full spring training before being sidelined with his dizziness issues. And I'm a little bit confused at why Brandon Drury is still in the minor leagues. Drury not only has had 12 games, but he's been playing pretty much every day. It's not like they've been sitting him after one or two games. I mean, he played on the 7th, the 6th, the 5th, the 4th, the 3rd, the 2nd, the 1st, the 30th, the 29th, twice, right? Brandon Drury's played a lot of baseball and doesn't seem to be suffering from those injuries or from the neurological issues. Because if he was, he wouldn't be playing every day. He'd be playing like every other day or something like that. And he's hit. I mean, he's hit 359, 458, 487 during those 12 games. So let me start with Jim. Why is Brandon Drury, assuming it's not the injuries aren't still on their radar and that's information we just don't have access to, why is Brandon Drury not in the major leagues right now?
I know that Andujar is in a little bit of a swoon right now, but I don't think he's done enough to be displaced, or Drury's done enough to displace Andujar. Because, I mean, Miguel's defense, because it's easier to say Miguel than Andujar.
Andujar.
Andujar has been, it's been fine. Like, like you guys have noticed in other podcasts, it's you know, you're not commenting on it frequently. And I know that his strikeout rate has definitely climbed. He's swinging at some bad pitches. But I think you want to let young developing players work through that these swoons at the level that they're in. I think if you demote him right now, he's probably just going to go back and dominate against AAA pitching, and he needs to make adjustments at the major league level. So I think until you see that, or until they come up with an alternate batting slot for Drury in the order, that they're going to slow play it and hope that, hope or wait for someone else to go down and open up a spot for him. That's what I see anyway.
Scott, what do you think?
Yeah, I totally agree that someone like, by the way, I talked to a friend of mine, a native Spanish speaker, and she thought it was Andujar. I told her that the accent, according to the man himself, seems to be Andujar. And that seems, she said, to be regional variation among countries, but it definitely is the ah for the on syllable. And so Andujar is probably acceptable, even though the guy himself calls it Andujar. But I'll have to adjust to that because, you know, I grew up, actually, I was a fan of Miguel Andujar back in the day, and we all called him Andujar. But apparently the an sound that, you know, maybe this is my native Queens.
Andujar.
Exactly. Yeah. The an sound is more Northern Queens than, Latin America. Anyhow, I think Andujar is basically so ready for the majors that if you sit him down, it's going to be hard for him to work on anything because there's a point at which a guy who's an above-average major league hitter already can just close his eyes and hit AAA pitching. So it's hard to have the discipline to work on something when it comes too easy, and I think he's already above-average major league as a hitter. He has to work on his defense maybe a little bit. They keep saying, I'm not enough of a defense expert to know it, but I think sending the guy down would just be such an injustice when he's done everything you asked and he's had a little ups and downs, but hey, so do all major leaguers, and on the net, he's an above average hitter who's holding his own at third base, and this is, you know, at a point at which he still has a little plate discipline to learn, a little defense to learn, but the fact that he clearly has a couple things to learn, but he's reportedly now a hard worker, and even with those things to learn, he's already an average to above average player, makes you really optimistic.
All right, so we don't beat a dead horse here, I'm going to stipulate that all three of us believe that Ronald Torres should go down to the minors and Brandon Drury should be promoted and share some playing time with Miguel Andujar and Neil Walker, etc. Assuming that that's not the option right now, is Andujar right now a better starting third baseman than Brandon Drury. And let me just read you some stats, man, on Duhar. His ex-WOBA, which is the StatCast predictive statistic for how good your overall plate appearances have been based upon batted ball contact, strikeout rate, and walk rate, is .339, which is above average, but not one. It's lower than what it's lower than probably what you'd expect out of Brandon Drury, and it has regret has fallen off a cliff since the first couple of weeks where he had like a 400 ex-WOBA, right? He was hitting, we all saw it, like he was hitting like a legitimate star. Is Andujar right now, I get the sense that right now the best player to win ball games for the Yankees is Brandon Drury.
I definitely think Drury can help, but I don't think it's for the reason of weakness in Andujar. I think the only weak spot in this lineup right now is Brett Gardner. And I think I would be happy with Drew, a world where Gardner, rather than playing 5 to 6 days a week, and sorry to totally pivot this on you, EJ.
It's fine. I was actually kind of going there. So
I think that both of these guys are probably in that ex-WOBA range, 330 plus, and both Drury and Andujar. I think that you rotate Gardner out of the rotation, move Stanton into left field, and then have a game where Andujar or Drury gets more time to some at bats at DH.
Or Drury could play some left field as well, right? Drury has played outfield in his career. I don't think he was very good at it, but he has, 90-something games in the corners for the D-backs over a couple of years. So he's got some talent right there. Yeah. And I'm with you. I mean, I think he's such a flexible player that you can promote him to the Major League roster even if he doesn't start every day. And as long as you have a 25-man roster spot for him, like, you'll make use of him. And like you just said, there are creative ways to use Brandon Drury that would be productive. And we should remember, like, unlike, say, Neil Walker, like, Brandon Drury is going to be on this team for a long time. Like, the Yankees have him under control right now, still on an entry-level contract. He hasn't even hit arbitration yet. So that's, what, 3 or 4 more years of Brandon Drury being potentially a utility player. I just don't think you can just let him languish at AAA for much longer.
Yeah, I'm skeptical of Drury for a couple of reasons. One is that he was mostly a third baseman in the minors, and point taken about the defense. But he was mostly a third baseman, and then he was genuinely bad in the majors at third base, according to all the numbers. And I'm just going to cite the numbers because he didn't play with us long enough for us to really get a decent visual of Brandon Drury. But he played mostly third base in the minors, by far. And he had better range in the minors than the majors. Who knows what to do with the minor league numbers. And at the plate, so I actually looked up the numbers, because Drury, they're now saying, well, maybe he's been playing with one hand tied behind his back due to the migraines and whatnot. So on the one hand, I looked at Drury's AA and AAA numbers, and get this, they're almost exactly the same as Miguel and Duhar's. So AA, AAA, combined to both, Drury's batting average is .302, and Duhar's is .297. They're almost identical. OPS within 20 points of each other. Both of them are also the same type of hitter in that they have a 6% walk rate, both of them in the minors, and a 13 to 15% strikeout rate. Sorry if that's a lot of numbers for oral. I'll spare you more, but every number is within a couple percent of each other. I will say, though, that Andujar, as you noted a couple of times, Trenton at AA is a bad hitter's park, and Drury played AAA at Reno, which is a good hitter's park. So they have really similar profiles. Good contact, low strikeouts, not many walks, just enough power to keep it interesting, and you believe they could drive it. But Andujar is just a better hitter, and Drury is almost 3 years older. So if he were going to be a good third baseman defensively, I think he would have by now, given that he got so much time there. And there's just not evidence he's a better hitter for the majors or the minors, unless you want to suggest that literally the past 6 years of his life he's been crippled by migraines, yet still playing in the majors, and I just doubt that. So I just think there's a lot of evidence that Drury is a better player at the plate, and that Drury is not actually a good defending third baseman.
All right, so speaking of good problems to have, the Yankees are about to have another kind of problem that they have to resolve with an incumbent who's playing fairly well and a probably better player who's coming off the DL in Greg Bird. I was about to say Jacoby Ellsbury, but let's be honest, he'll be injured for a while. But Greg Bird is coming off the disabled list, and Greg Bird is, I think, right now taking extended spring training at bats. So he'll probably move up to Tampa soon, and then probably will get close to 2 weeks or so before he returns. let's say he hits well enough. He looks like Greg Bird in the minors, you know, during his rehab assignments. And Tyler Austin looks like he's looking right now. So he's got an ex-WOBA right now. Looks like Tyler Austin's at 379. You know, between the last two seasons, he's Tyler Austin's at about 355, 360. So let's say he's somewhere in that range 2-3 weeks from now. What do you do, Scott, about this first base logjam?
Yeah, it's a tough question. So I think that it's funny how much the consensus is of Yankee fans, Twitter commenting, and frankly us, which is that, well, I haven't heard you guys out on this, but I think Neil Walker and Torres have both outlived their usefulness similarly. In that, look, I was a huge fan of the Walker signing, but he just hasn't made it. And yes, maybe there's some bad luck in this, but he's also a brittle guy. And the upside for Neil Walker was never that great. So let's say you're wrong and he signs on with some other teams and is solid. It's not like you've given up a future superstar or anything. So I think that you probably can't keep enough guys around. Austin's not that positionally versatile, but, and this gets to my solution, I won't, you know, that I have a hunch we all agree on, which is that the best use of Brandon Drury is as a super sub, and if you do that, then you can afford the lighter depth in the infield that having Bird and Austin gives you.
Jim, what do you think about that?
I mean, I would support it because, I mean, my frustration with a lot of Yankee fans about this is that the assumption that Greg Bird is this, you know, superhero compared to Tyler Austin, and I don't want to live in a world where Tyler Austin gets demoted for Greg Bird. You look at their, you know, Greg Bird has 100 more at bats. Their OPSs are within 1 point of each other over their career, and Austin has demonstrated a big leap forward. So I can't see him getting moved. I do think that the way the Yankees are pitching right now, they probably are carrying one pitcher extra, so you might not have to move off both Torres and Walker to make this work. You might just have to pick one. But I'd be fine with a world of dumping Walker, keeping Bird and Austin up, because at least Austin can give you at least a, you know, some flexibility at a corner outfield spot. I can trust him for three innings in left field, in addition to some DH and first base time.
I wouldn't be shocked if Walker is also tradable. Like, maybe not for a huge return, but I don't think you would just have to eat his salary, or at least all of it, in order to trade him away. I kind of like that plan. Part of me wants to see Greg Bird perform before I pull the trigger or anything like that. I believe Tyler Austin has options. And so I would not be shocked if that's what happens. But, you know, like you said, they're carrying that extra player. Maybe they promote Brandon Drury. They keep Miguel and Duhar down. They send down Ronald Torres, and then they get rid of that pitcher. Then it's actually a doable. Then you have just a four-man bench, like a normal major league bench, even though we haven't really seen that anytime recently. Are any of you concerned about Tyler Austin's kind of May slump? Good, because neither am I. He's only played three games in May.
Yeah, I was like, waiting to see if someone to bite. Yeah.
It feels like Tyler Austin has been like not doing very much recently because he had the suspension, which I think honestly was harsh by Major League Baseball. But he had the suspension. And then in May, they've been facing a lot of like right-handers, and they've been putting Neil Walker in. And so he's played three games. And, you know, during that three games, doesn't have a hit. So that's not great, but I'm not reading anything into that. I think he's still probably the player he's been all season. And to review, that's 254, 329, 549. He's been excellent this season. And I think that I think that every indication is that he'll continue to be so. And at the very least, he's a platoon option with Greg Bird once Greg Bird comes back. You could get a really special platoon out of those two.
Yeah, and he's also been up against good pitching. So, you know, you can forgive a little bit of, yeah, you know, three bad games, but Mike Clevinger is hit and miss, but potentially a really tough righty.
Yeah, no one else was hitting him that night.
Right. And then Dallas Keuchel, who, you know, again, hit and miss, he's lefty, but he's a good pitcher, you know, and then before that, Verlander. So, you know, three bad games against those three guys.
Yeah, Verlander, who was just unhittable, and then we won the game after he left.
Right. But Verlander, have you heard that he's cheating by coating himself in pine tar every morning head to toe?
Did you hear about the Trevor Bauer experiment to show that you could increase your spin rate with pine tar? That was wonderful. Trevor Bauer, a bit of an asshole, but I kind of like him.
Yeah.
I kind of wish he was our asshole. That's my thought. All right, so that's Greg Bird. Other interesting news on Sunday, Domingo Germán, who we've been cheerleading this entire season, went out and pitched a six-inning no-hitter. Is Domingo Germán the next rookie, like, out of nowhere Yankee pitcher a la Jordan Montgomery, Jim?
I mean, his stuff is more electric than Jordan Montgomery. I think where he differs from someone like, like Severino, his command, I think he got away with a lot this weekend. And I'm not saying his stuff was electric, and I love his approach to pitching. I think, you know, I gushed on it last week where he will throw anything in any count. And I love that about a pitcher. He left a lot of changeups up, though. And I think that the Indians looked like a team that really had never seen a guy, never had seen this particular pitcher, 96 with movement and a good changeup. That's a tough matchup your first time through. I think against a more patient team, I think he's going to struggle, as Montgomery does. I think a lot of people are seeing ace in him, but until he sorts out, you know, some of the command stuff, I think more patient and assertive teams like the Red Sox are going to give him trouble at the major league level, because they're willing to take pitches and bat with two strikes, and they have a better understanding of where the bottom of the strike zone is and where the edges of the plate are.
I mean, just to push you a little bit, I mean, the Indians aren't a nothing lineup.
No, they're definitely not. But he's a bad matchup for a lefty team, because his fastball got a ton of tail on it, and his changeup. It is a Bugs Bunny changeup. I mean, if you can throw a changeup thigh high over the center of the plate and a lefty swing through it, you have arrived with that pitch. And that's where he was on Sunday. He was spinning it. But I think against a righty lineup where a lot of his stuff, his slider is still kind of a show-me pitch. You know, a team that has a better balance of hitting and, you know, forces him to throw, proper strikes. You know, I think there was a bit of a wide zone on Sunday. I think he could get into trouble. He's electric, though. He's got loads of upside. I'm not ready to say ace or future number three starter quite yet.
All right, Scott, a week ago you were fairly optimistic about Domingo Germán. I think all of us were. How has your opinion changed or not changed after Sunday's start?
Future Hall of Famer, Cy Young.
There we go, right?
Consecutive years. No, obviously I don't want to make too much of it, but, taking what Jim said is a valid point, that the control is basically solid, but the command within the zone isn't, ace level, and that may trace to things Jim spotted in, how he is physically on the mound. And I buy that, but I'll say that he gets such movement on the ball that he has, maybe I'm picking and choosing years, but he has high ground ball rates for a guy who throws really hard. Often the guys that throw really hard don't have the, 50%+ ground ball rates, but he does. So I think he gets away with it a little bit. They're not getting a lot of hard contact off him, again, just in a small major league sample, but the ground ball rates were there in the minors too. So if you have a guy who doesn't walk a lot of guys, but every now and then there are mistakes in the zone, but the ball moves enough that he generates a lot of grounders, a guy with great stuff, but maybe not the full four-pitch complement and not great command, maybe my archetypes for this are A.J. Burnett and Edwin Jackson. And Yes, two guys who were, similar, but Burnett at his best was better than Jackson. Jackson was average to a bit above average, and you kept expecting more because the stuff was really good. And it never quite happened, but I think that you hate to say that's the floor for a guy who's barely pitched in the majors, but I think given his stuff and the fact that he's not walking the world, even if the command is dicey, and he gets such movement that even when he's in the middle of the zone, like you're saying, he'll get away with it. I mean, sure, he'll eventually give up some home runs if he throws more and leaves them up in the zone or what have you. But I think that this is a guy who, between the stuff and the basic control and the movement on the pitches generating, weak contact, unlike Betances, we'll get to in a minute. I think this is a guy whose floor is maybe number three start, whose likely floor, let's say. And he could be a lot higher.
So also, just for what it's worth, he hasn't shown much of a platoon split in the minors. So he didn't have a platoon split in 2017 or 2016, though he didn't pitch a lot in 2016. He did have one way back in 2014, but not a particularly strong one. So hopefully, Jim is wrong. He might not be wrong, but hopefully he's wrong. And I'm going to ask you guys a quick trivia question. Whoever answers the trivia question correctly gets to be the first person to answer Adele and Betances' question. Who did the Yankees trade in order to get Domingo Germán?
Martin Prado and David Phelps.
What's that?
Martin Prado and David Phelps.
Okay, yeah, there you go. All right, yeah. I was hoping that someone would leave out the David Phelps part.
But I'm laughing as I say it because I'm not proud I know this one because I wrote on our old blog about how this is the greatest trade because Nathan Eovaldi is going to be the man, right? And I mentioned David Phelps is garbage, Prado is, you know, average, and, you know, Eovaldi's going to be the man. I was wrong on every one of the three of them.
And some random single A arm.
But, and I didn't even mention him, so I was wrong on literally all four parts of that trade. So I'm not proud. I know this one because of the blunder, not because I know it.
Next question. So Dellin Betances, Scott, is he good again?
Good, not great. I think it's weird because I think we're all expecting that Betances is either old Dellin Betances, who's basically as good as Chapman, or he's garbage. You never wanted to let him play in the major leagues again.
Is he a top flight setup man again?
I mean, it's a weird definition, but I'd say he's a upper flight setup man in that I think that what we're seeing is that he isn't the completely lost guy you saw at the end of last season, but he's not the same guy, and I suspect that he's just leaving the ball over the plate more just to avoid the walks. So his hard contact rate is actually remarkably high this year, and again, relievers haven't thrown that many innings, but we're all looking for some clues about a reliever. I suspect that when you have Betances' stuff, which is still good, excellent, and you're giving up hard contact, I think that means he's just decided, or been told, frankly, right, we can't have you walking guys in and whatnot, so you got to just throw the ball over the plate, trust your stuff, the old cliches. When you do that, every now and then you're throwing meatballs, or they're going to see it coming. So I think that it's possible that the guy he's become is a guy who just has to give up on command and, you know, maybe he's little Nate Eovaldi then. You know, a guy with great stuff who just will get hit hard because he throws it over and the command's weak.
Jim, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think I don't read too much into, you know, what happened against Cleveland, because all the damage to me happened in the second inning of work. And he's just – I know he came up as a starter, but he's not a two-inning pitcher at the majors right now, especially with how shaky he's been. I was looking back. I mean, his last seven appearances he hadn't allowed a run. He had barely allowed a hit, and his K rate had gone way up. I mean, he was – I got him at 13 Ks in his last seven appearances. That's more what we expect from Dellin Betances. I do think that his command has been terrible. But he's, you know, to your original question, I think he's probably a top third setup man.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot of room for him to get consistent setup man work on this team, because when Canely comes back, they really have three guys in front of him that they'd rather be setting up games than Dellin Betances.
Well, but is that a good thing, though, if he's can only now at this point of his career pitch one inning at a time?
I think it's okay. I mean, I think he's pitched in some high leverage situations. I think they're probably better off, though. I mean, that's a lot of equity to hold up in the back five slots of the bullpen. They're probably better off getting his numbers down and trying to move him, because I don't think they're going to be able to groove him back into where he was in 2016, in his current slot. He's going to need a couple people to go down to get the consistent work and build the confidence all the way back up. And I don't see that happening with this bullpen, because they're too stacked in front of him.
All right, so I've been going back and forth on this question for, like, months now, okay? So I don't know if Dellin Betances is good or terrible. Here is the two sides of my brain right now. So right now he's got a 5.79 ERA, but he's a reliever. We should look at the other stats anyway. 3.17 FIP, 0.95 xFIP. Why is that xFIP so low? Well, it's because he's got the highest strikeout rate since 2013 right now, basically the highest strikeout rate of his career over any lengthy period of time. He has the second lowest walk rate of his career, and he's allowed 2 home runs per 9 innings. He has a 60% home run per fly ball rate. That is bad. Like, that is not going to that would be the worst in the league if he maintained it there. If that goes back down to merely high, merely 20% or something like that, all of a sudden Dellin Betances becomes a dominant reliever again. And Statcast suggests that those home runs weren't unlucky, right? So those were Statcast puts his xWOBA right around his FIP, slightly above average, and or more than slightly above average, and suggest that batters have just teed him up a couple of times. And I think that Dylan Betances is good enough that he will, his stuff will overcome that. Maybe it's because they've been pitching him that extra inning and that's not a good thing. Maybe this the beginning of the season, he just wasn't right. He's looked a lot like Dylan Betances a lot of the time he's been out there lately. Yeah. And I think there's like a pretty solid chance that he becomes like, again, the best one-inning relief pitcher on the Yankees.
Yeah, I basically agree. And I was noting the 0.95 xFIP, too. So it gives you some wariness about xFIP, but not really. It really, what it shows is that any one stat has a blind spot or misses some things. What xFIP misses is that there are times where there's harder contact than others. And the striking thing about his numbers to me is the stats on soft, medium, hard contact. 83% of the contact off him has been medium or hard. 40% has been hard. In general, if you're a hitter and you have over 40% hard contact, over 40% medium contact, you're a really good hitter. You're an all-star hitter, basically. And that's to say the average hitter off Dylan Betances is that. I do think, though, there's some luck in that because, like you're saying, let's say my fear is right in that to avoid the walks of last year, he's just throwing them over the center of the plate and seeing what happens and they can tee up at times. Well, his stuff is still good enough that if he does that, that's not great. And if he just, you know, goes to whatever he can control or takes a little off it, he shouldn't be generating that hard contact. I don't think his stuff has become garbage. And I think that, you know, quality of contact.
That a 519 BABIP is going to regress.
Right. I mean, that can happen if you're giving up that hard contact. But I just don't believe that a guy with his stuff can be constantly giving up that hard contact. One last thing I saw is that I looked at his ball and strike rates for the past 4 years. The past 4 years, he's been right at 62% strikes, except last year was 58.6. Point is, he dropped in strike throwing last year. He got up this year to his prior levels, but again, that I suspect that he's just throwing it right over. But yeah, his stuff is good enough that even if he's giving up on command, he should still be a good pitcher.
And one thing we should remember is that he's not young anymore. Betances is 30 years old. So, like, you know, this could be the beginning of the end. I'm kind of with you guys. I think trading him is an interesting idea if you know, they have that opportunity at the deadline or they need to shed some salary at the deadline in order to add Manny Machado.
But isn't that a sell-low prospect? I mean, what are you really going to get for a guy who's clearly – he's not Matt Harvey damaged goods, but he's the same category.
It's true.
Houston would probably buy him right now.
Yeah, sure.
And I think, you know, I think a good portion of this, EJ, you mentioned, like, he's been pitching substantially better lately. He had the one blip, you know, this weekend. But I think comparing Betances now to Betances, you know, 5 years ago, his fastball, while it's still, he still throws very hard, but it's a pretty straight fastball. And I think both of you were referencing the hard hit contact. I think hitters can look middle third and outer third on him. There's not a whole lot of repercussion. He doesn't attack the inner half of the plate. And compared to, you know, our new hero, Domingo, he doesn't throw a very heavy ball. If you square it, it's going to go far because it's straight and it's much easier to barrel compared to someone like, you know, Domingo or you know, Mariano or even, you know, guys like Tillman who throw a sinker coming out of the bullpen.
So, and that's been the case, I think, with Betances for a while, right? That like, if you square him up, you get hit hard. Just he's been the toughest pitcher to square up in baseball for a while.
And yeah.
If he can bring that back, he should be fine. I'm trying to find his swing and miss rate on Fangraphs right now, except this is not one of those things that I actually look at very often, so I probably can't help you out right there.
But per what James said, you know, I can agree with you, Jim, that it seems like they've adjusted to him in some way because the weird thing is that they're making really hard contact off him, but they're not pulling the ball. They're going the other way or to center, but very little pulling, less than half as much as prior years. So it seems like they're trying to go the other way. And, you know, if there's really hard contact going the other way, that seems like that's not a sustainable strategy against Dylan Betances. Or it may be the right strategy, but you're not generally going to get nothing but line drives trying to go the other way off him. And that's to say that if they're going the other way, then they're not totally squaring up on his stuff. They're just hitting it well the other way, but that's not the sort of guy you think, boy, they're going to light him up permanently.
Yeah. And I should notice, so I found it, his swinging strike percentage actually has declined since 2016. So from 2015 to 2016, his like ace years, he had a 15% strikeout swinging strike rate, which is elite. And then that went down to about 13% in 2017, 2018. So there's definitely been a decline there.
Yeah.
And he's easier to hit.
And I would bet, you know, that split, you know, by pitches, I'll do some homework over the the week, but I bet you the split, you know, on fastball compared to breaking ball is even more severe. It's probably 30% breaking ball and, you know, 4% fastball, because it doesn't seem fastball strikes for him seem to be strikes looking when someone else is, when they're sitting breaking ball. That's just watching the games. That's what it seems like to me.
All right, I'm at 5% battery life, and actually, just one other thought. Don't trade him to Houston, because Houston will do some voodoo on him, and he'll become like Mariano Rivera all over again.
They're going to trade him to Pittsburgh. You know it. It'll be Pittsburgh, and they'll turn him into the best starter ever.
I'm fine with that, because I'm pretty sure Pittsburgh won't be in the World Series anytime soon. All right, you guys, thank you for joining me. Everybody else, thank you for listening. We might be back with a special episode over the weekend. Keep a lookout for that. But otherwise, we will see you next week. This has been your Bronx Beat Podcast.